The poets are coming. The poets are coming.
The poets are coming.
The poets are coming.
The poets are coming.
The poets are coming.
The poets are coming.
The poets are coming.
The poets are coming.
The
poets are coming.
We're here now.
Shall the world be free?
My earliest memory of spoken word, that's a challenging question to me because we didn't always call it spoken word. We called it at some point oral poetry and or just poetry. And spoken word seems like it's something that came in the 90s maybe. But I keep thinking in terms of I'm a poet.
Actually, my earliest memories of spoken word in Minnesota was when I was in high school at South High, and this was from 89 to 93. And I was on speech team, and I was interested in doing poetry. And this poet came to my school named Quincy Troop, and he did poetry that was steeped in a very different oral tradition than a lot of the poetry that I was taught was poetry, you know. Also at the time I was in English classes learning about people like The Last Poets and Gil Scott-Heron.
Being sort of on the periphery of it, when my older brother was at the U and would come home really excited about, you know, readings and performances at the whole coffee house. He was part of the Beat Generation, I guess you'd say. And, you know, he was really turned on by things like word jazz and, you know, the things that he and some of the other poets who were at the U were doing back then. So that was my first real intro.
Actually, I have to think back 1997, 1998, and it was Jitters, it was South Beach, it was the Bomb Shelter, it was Jazzville. So I remember, you know, attending a spoken word venue for the very first time and being extremely excited about what the youth at the time was doing.
The 2002 National Poetry Slam. I hadn't been back in Minnesota for very long. I'd been traveling the country for several years, and I'd been doing open mics all across the country, but I'd never done one in Minnesota. And I'd opened up the newspaper and saw a large schedule of events for something called the National Poetry Slam.
Going to college at UW-Madison, a spoken word open mic, a monthly event, had just started up, like when I was a freshman there. So I went to check it out and see what it was like, and just immediately knew that that was the medium for me, because as a performance artist, like, you know, I'm not writing poems and sending them off to journals to get published, but it's like I can write something and then share it with people right who are right in front of me.
I used to go to school at St. Cloud State, came here to a conference, then I saw a spoken word performance in St. Paul to a conference. I didn't know what it was, all I knew was that was dope. If that is poetry, that's the kind of poetry I want to write.
When I woke up this morning, I had sandy sleepy residue in my eye and I was yawning. Hey, get up, roll over, hit the shower. You have a day to conquer that is hour after hour after hour after hour. Comb my hair, brush my teeth, put the high techs on my figgy feet, and I start to step in. What if something happens? I need my weapon. My Smith & Wesson teaches lessons, so I grab my pistol and I wet my whistle and I'm on my way to face a new day. What will the landlord say? I have rent to pay, I want to stay, but it's late, what's my fate? No food on my plate, I headed for the gate. Damn this world, I hate it complicates. As I try to situate, it's symbolic of time. And yes, I really, really want a life, I really want a love, I really, really want to feel the happiness from up above. I really want a car, I really want a home, I really want to have a few things I can call my own. And yes, I really want to have the strength to make my own my own. I really want to keep the slugs from guns out of my dome. I really want to walk out in them streets at night without them cop lights to make my future seem bright. But I don't have no job, and I don't have no money, Education lost in this land of milk and honey, but our strive, survive the lies that are embedded into our system to take away our pride. Our lives, I realize that pumping drugs into the hood is blatant genocide. So I roll one, light one, and cry and ask why we die for some guy that took us from our homeland and pollutes our God-filled skies. And I look on the corner as they slang and cane. Monopoly is the game they playing. One has more money, who sells more crack? And killing all people, or people are black or white, or what's in between? Our future as a people will not be seen. If you poison us like the common pest, our whole entire nation will be put to rest. Look at yourself as you look at the land and you ask of yourself, are you really a man or a woman of sorts wearing Daisy Duke shorts, carrying a gun just because it is fun? And you blast at your friends just to get a few ins, and you kill all your foes because that's just how shit goes. And you leave a long trail of them bloods in your path. You will someday somehow answer to your God's wrath. And I will never, ever, never, ever be the fella that them devils have the African that is inside of me.
My name is Louis Salamayu, and I'm a poet. There was an institution in our community that was at some point right downtown here, a kitty corner from the library. It was called the African American Cultural Center. And that was an institution that I think began in 1968, sometime after the riots. I think basically they were trying to put something in place to calm us down. But it was really good in terms of giving us a place to go and a place for a lot of artistic and political expression. And there were a good number of writers and poets who would show up in that place. And it was an institution where a lot of us who are now elder artists met at the African American Cultural Center. And that initial, say, constellation of black artists pretty much set the stage for what came after us. And some of us are still here and active and being supportive of other artists, younger artists.
My name is Carolyn Holbrook. I remember when I got, you know, started sort of getting involved in, I guess it was neighborhood organizing and things. Somebody invited me to read a poem at a small little space, and there was Roy McBride, and you know, he was doing his thing. I was like, oh, that was my first introduction to what was going on here. And mid to late 70s, and you know, it's just really exciting for me to know that, wow, there's people doing this crazy thing here. Lewis, and I think that was around the same time that I started, you know, I heard Louis Alamayu and this woman named Maisie Johnson. They were the ones who were really doing the spoken word here.
When sorrow's souls have turned to ashes, and our children's voices come up through flowers, I will think of you and feel both joy and sadness. Remembering the frigid winter winds, spring's gentle, generous rains, is 'cause we've been here. so long. Things at rest tend to stay put. Now that's a curse and a salvation, child. We may not know every hair on the head of our history, but we know what's underneath the skin and pulses inside. We are deep, deep people. Flowing, flowing, flowing like a river.
Roy McBride was always interested in just, you know, putting it out there everywhere, you know, on the street corners, on soapboxes, and, you know, poetry for the people, in other words, that I didn't see anyone else at that time anyway, who was as willing or as passionate or as adamant as he was about
life
making poetry accessible,
never imagine,
which I think is the beauty of spoken word. Is that it's accessible.
You are what I could never imagine happening to me. So familiar and totally unknown. Urban wilderness surrounding us. Vivid dreams of vegetable stands and nuclear reactors. Beautiful mornings, afternoons, nights. Smile at me once more, please. Life happening to us. Late love, dream, date, your eyes, your lips. On my plate, sucking on your ears, nibbling at your chin. Life is what we could never imagine happening to us. You are what I could never imagine happening to me. Valentine.
I'm Marcy Brendan, and I'm primarily a writer. I think that the people that I had connections with, other than probably Lewis, were more grassroots people, you know, like people who were doing things, like I said, Michael Chaney in his backyard. And there would be, and I can't even, other than Honesty, I can't remember the names of some of the other poets that would show up and perform there.
We were networked and supporting one another. And we're doing also political cultural work together. Like, how do we get all of these institutions to address racism and classism and homophobia? And I mean, we were doing that. And for the most part, there's a level of cooperation here that sort of spilled over into the artistic world, or the artistic world was a part of it, or the catalyst for it too. It's kind of hard to say what was what.
I'm William Harris, also known as Be Fresh and Truth Maze. I'm an artist, and I'm one of the originators of the hip-hop scene of Minneapolis, the Twin Cities area. There were older poets, like Mother Naima and Jerry Alexander, and then there was Michael Chaney, who was probably like the biggest influence on me, as far as performance-wise, because his stuff like was like G-Force. When he spit it, it was just powerful. And it made sense to me. It made sense to me, like the metaphor and the allegory and everything that he was doing, even the parables, they all made sense. It was like I was already attuned to this particular type of knowledge that creates this type of way of conveying your, you know, using language.
Another influence for me, and I think for some other people, was the presence of Etheridge Knight. And Etheridge Knight was here sometime in the late 80s, late 70s, and I remember him as somebody who would do something like, for instance, he would sing Willow Weep for Me as part of his poetry reading. And he very much made the argument that there was an oral tradition, an oral aspect of poetry.
I'm Jay Otis Powell. I'm a writer, a performance artist, arts administrator, curator, etc. I didn't move to the Twin Cities until 87, and so everything happened after that. And I kind of discovered the literary community a couple of years after I got here. At that time, Alex Pate was also doing spoken word and performance art, not only as an artist, but as a curator. And another venue that I didn't mention that was also serving performance art and spoken word art was Intermedia Arts and Patrick's Cabaret. Those places were very supportive venues of artists who were outside of the box, so to speak, in terms of bringing literature to voice.
I believe that there always are people on the verge of something different, and the time in which they're trying to do it in may not, whether this makes sense, it may not be the right time.
My name is David Murrah, and I'm a writer and performance artist. I write fiction, nonfiction, poetry, and plays, and criticism, so pretty much everything. I've been in the Twin Cities since 1974, and from that time up until the mid to late 80s, the community was essentially white. I was aware that Louis Alemayo was doing work, that Roy McBride was doing work, and I knew them because of I know with Roy because of Poets in the Schools, and we worked together. And then I knew that I'd met Alex Pate sometime in the late 80s.
I still had this idea that as Native people, somebody needed to show up. And so I know that I did a couple things at Kieran's. There were other venues where I would show up and read just because I knew that there were no Native people showing up. And at the same time, I was like trying to get other Native people to show up. Jameson Matto was another one who was sort of around at the time, but he was more of a musician, although he had his old Blues for Franklin Avenue poetry thing that he read and did. And I think that one of the first theater pieces that we did, like I did this poetic theater piece at Southern Theater, and I think Jameson was there and did his Blues for Franklin Avenue piece.
There was also a club here called the Rainbow Gallery, I think. It was on the West Bank. It's nearby, it's like across the street from where Bedlam is now. And there was a lot of avant-garde jazz happening out of that place. And I also believe there was some spoken word happening too.
I think that was around the time before I left Whittier. I'm almost sure that Alex and David had started performing their multi-dimensional performances at the Southern and such places. I'm almost sure that's when it was. And that opened up a whole new avenue, you know, for people to see something new.
My name is Bao Phi, spoken word artist and also community organizer. If you're talking about performance and literature, that would probably be Entezake Shange at the Sabathany. I think that she came, I think in 92. I think I was a junior in high school. I don't know the exact date, but I know that Shange came to Sabathany, to this packed house. And I was this high school kid. And, you know, I had listened to recordings of The Last Poets. I had read Gil Scott-Heron, listened to recordings, and I had seen Alvin Ang in a video clip on television. But I think Shange and Quincy Troupe were my two first experiences with poets who performed.
Well, I think another important event during that time was the series during the period about between the middle 80s and the early 90s was, it's what, 1990, that Alex Pate curated a series of performance artwork at Intermedia Arts. And I remember people like Essex Hempel, the gay black poet, came and performed as part of that series. And that exposed audiences to a whole different type of work. Which, if I look back now, you know, had elements of spoken word, but nobody really knew that.
My name is Chris Shillock. I write poetry. Sometimes I produce shows. There was a bar still there in Northeast called Mazelax, and they had regular poetry readings there. I believe it was, might have been every week, every 2 weeks, something like that. They did have slams at one point there, but usually it was a very diverse crowd. I remember a poet named Iowa Blackie, hobo poet. He would come in there and perform. There's a group called the Minneapolis Poetry All-Stars. I never actually performed there, but I did go to some of the readings there, the regular readings. It was at that time a working class bar. The Northeast District, which is now very much an arts district, was at that time very much a working class district. And they had all these poets coming into this bar there. That went on for about 2 or 3 years until, I guess, people thought the poets were rather strange there. So they stopped doing that. This was, I believe, about the middle 90s or so. At that point, as far as I know, poetry started going around. There started being open mics at different places. There was an open mic at a bar called the Irish Well in St. Paul along University Avenue. That moved around, ended up at Kieran's Bar. And that's where I really started doing poetry, where I started performing.
As far as slam goes, Diego Vasquez is the one who, after Margie Ligon at the Loft, or at the Walker, after she and I brought the New Eurekans in, and he was one of the people that, we started having programs like all around the city just to get people ready for slam, and to get people, you know,
to knowing about the New Eurekans. So we started having slams all over town. And then, you know, someone who won each of the slams was able to perform with the New Eurekans when they came. And Diego just kind of loved it, I think. He kind of loved the idea and thought, you know, we should do this in Minneapolis.
The overall effect of that was it felt like, oh, gee, these guys are here performing something that it felt very familiar. You know, I think so many of us were already, you know, involved in that. But as far as I can't remember a particular Minnesota spoken word event until that time when the New Yorkers came in. You know, there probably were some others, you know, but nothing rings a bell at the moment.
What stood out was how animated the performances were based on what I had seen previously. Because I moved up here from down south, and poets down south and in other places I had seen them were much more animated because they generally came from oral traditions. And I got up to Minnesota and animation was not the way to be, especially in regards to expressing literature. And so to actually see some animated writers on stage was what stood out.
So you didn't have this one particular crowd at Poetry Slam. You had everybody. I mean, I make it sound like it was a very eclectic fest, and I liked that. You know, it was cool.
The level, the bar was raised with every series of slams, you know, and people actually started showing up every time a slam was announced because it had a cachet, you know, and it was cool to be there. Like Bob said, what are you people doing at a poetry slam on a Saturday night? You know, it was cool to be into slams, you know, and so it really changed how people thought about poetry readings in this area.
My name is Laura Winton. Right now, I'm a graduate student, and I've been a spoken word performer, performance artist, theater artist, writer, and now writing on spoken word as well. It really started to pick up, I think, 97, 98. We started to have a really active open mic scene, and there were lots and lots of open mics. You could go to an open mic virtually every night of the week. You know, we had a lot of spoken word bands were coming up. It was very diverse. You know, the artist quarter had jazz music. They played jazz behind you while you did your poetry, and that was really fun.
I think there was this invigorating interest in these art forms that were coming from neighborhoods like mine, you know?
While there were more things happening in the spoken word scene, it was moving more into, I think the whole spoken word thing was moving more into like its own art form and taking over venues or finding venues to do this in.